Hello, and welcome back to Millennial 2018. And I'm now here with Frode Midyard of the Skansa Forum and now the Guide to Culture. And welcome, Frode.
Well, thank you very much. I just got back from Kiev, and well, it was snowing. It's snowing quite a bit, and it was a bit cold there, but it's not very cold in Bergen. But with the millennial, I'm getting into the Christmas atmosphere and the Christmas spirit anyways. I mean, it's only my second time on, but it still feels like a tradition in some ways.
Yes. You and I did do the on the live channel, and I
Yeah.
hope that, by the way, just for the sake of it, I'll say that people should be subscribed to the live channel because I do stuff on there, not just now, but in the near future, and certainly next year. But you and I did do that. We did an AMA related to the Swedish election. Apart from that, the only other time you've been on my channel, I think, was last year's Millennial.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. But we've done a few podcasts together and conferences and so on.
Indeed, I've been at two of your conferences,
Yeah.
and we've done at least one. Sorry, the Menifrego podcast that you were doing last year. We did that. I think we might have done it something else as well, but I can't remember now. But yes, about millennial, it does indeed feel like a tradition is developing, and it's very nice. So I'm glad to be doing that. It makes it all the more special that it's a consistent yearly thing. So
Yeah.
welcome back. So, and I should say that people will be, I haven't looked at the live chat yet, but I'm sure that people are very impressed by your Christmassy, or should I say, Yuletidy cardigan.
It's my aunt who knitted it for me. Yeah, I don't know. It's I don't think of it like that, but I usually get comments. It's from the Faroe Islands, and I guess it's common for people to wear that type of thing there, but maybe not elsewhere. So maybe it looks a bit unusual. I don't know.
Is it nice and warm?
Yeah, it is. It is. And I'm also having a bit of glögg, which is warmed wine, sweet wine. I guess it's sort of like Glühwein. I've never been in Germany around Christmas, but I guess they also drink some sort of heated up type of wine. I don't know how common it is outside of Scandinavia and Germany, though. It might be common. I don't know.
I couldn't tell you. I'm sorry. But yes, okay. So let's talk about, first of all, the Skansa Forum, and briefly talk about the history of that and any future conferences that are on the cards.
All right, yeah, sure. The Skansa Forum was started in 2017. We did two conferences last year, and we have done two conferences this year, one in Stockholm and one in Copenhagen. And the one in Copenhagen was also the first one we did in Denmark. So we operate in three countries now. And we've had Jared Taylor twice, and this is also his first time in Scandinavia was the Stockholm conference this spring. Greg Johnson has been on twice. He has actually been on every conference I've organized, so he's the regular speaker there, and he's always appreciated. So I also, yeah, I'm very grateful that he has supported us all the way from the beginning. I also did a couple of conferences even before I founded Skansa Forum, and he also spoke at those. Yeah, you spoke at the Stockholm event, a very appreciated speech, and Roger Devlin spoke, Matt Tate, Helmut Nyborg, the Golden One, Marcus Folin, Chris Dalny, from Sweden, and we
Yeah,
also.
Matt Tate was at the Denmark one, not the
Yeah,
Stockholm one. Yeah,
exactly.
I wasn't at that one. It's important to say also that I was at the one last year in Oslo. That's where I gave the mobilization speech. Which, it was put together in a rush, but people seemed to like it. I was relieved.
Yeah, it was really, really well received. It was, I mean, many of my friends said afterwards that that was one of the thing they would give to a new person to sort of introduce them to our way of thinking and so on. So I think that's probably very popular.
And then the one this year that I did was about, it was shorter, I think it was half the length, And it was it was about sort of troubles in the movement that I was seeing at the time. A lot of people said that I shouldn't have done that speech, but I think it was a good cautionary tale. And that was in the middle of there were two other conferences that we went to after that, and it was a very stressful time. But the Stockholm, the Skanza conference went very well, I thought.
Yeah, exactly. And we also went to Helsinki, to Finland, the day after, and spoke there. So it was a busy time, but it was good fun.
It was exhausting. But I had made the dreadful mistake of leaving the writing of those speeches to as late as possible because I was working on other things. Dreadful mistake. I'll never do that to myself again because the Helsinki conference was I literally wrote those speeches that day. Before giving them, and that was just a stupid. I really regret that.
Two of them as well.
Yeah, two, and they should have been so much better than they were. I'd really regret it. But again, people didn't seem to notice. You know, people seemed to like them. But personally, I feel regretful about it. But anyway, that's irrelevant. This is about you, and Skanza. So, are there any future conferences planned just now?
Yeah, I also want to say that we also had a special guest appearance in Stockholm, which I'll not name him, but he's a friend of both of us, and that was also very much appreciated. Did a sort of a cultural thing that added a lot to the atmosphere and the success of that event, I would say. So I'm very pleased that we were able to introduce Jared Taylor. Of course, people know about Jared Taylor from before, but I mean, introduce him as a speaker physically in Scandinavia. So not just knowing him from the internet, but actually getting a chance to meet him, and that's a good privilege for us to be able to do that both in Sweden and in Denmark, and to start up a thing in Denmark because apart from Sweden, the Scandinavian countries don't really have much of a presence in the real world of nationalist movements. Not in the same way as Sweden. They do have their things, but Sweden has a lot more activity on that scene. So I'm very pleased that we were able to contribute to that as well.
Yeah, and somebody in the chat is asking about Norway as well. He's saying that there's barely anything. Ask him, Frode, how we can make ethno-nationalism grow in Norway. It barely exists there. I mean, obviously, that's a huge question. But
it is, yeah. I mean, the only thing is people have to take the risk of being sort of... There's always a social risk of being a public person. But you really have to do it, because without that, if it only exists on the internet, nothing will ever happen. And so we need more people who are just public faces to show that we are normal people and people who others can identify with, and we're relatable and so on. And that's because the strongest weapon of our detractors and our sort of the people who hate us, the people on the left and others, the strongest weapon they have is to basically paint us paint images of us as weird people in some
weirdos,
ways.
Weirdos, misfits.
Aggressive or angry or otherwise socially maladapted. But if we can just show that we are normal, relatable people, others will also find it more comfortable to just join us and see that, well, everything is just normal when we just have good fun at our events, and that's what people need to see. And that's why we also publish everything on the internet, because you know, on YouTube, all the speeches and so on, because the point of the event is not just to get the ideas out there, but to have a social gathering, because I never grow sort of tired of saying, is that it's not really the arguments, it's people who make up a political movement, it's people who attract other people and people who convince other people, and that's why we actually need to meet up in the real world so people don't feel isolated. Because I always, when I go to these events, I get the impression that there is a hunger and a thirst for meeting others, because so many sit on the internet and read things and think thoughts and think they are alone about this, and then they are really relieved to actually meet others who they can identify with and relate to, and just build those social bonds. And that's probably the main purpose of these kinds of events. It's just social networking, I'd say.
Yeah, it's social networking. I mean, that, and I completely agree with you. I think for most people, that is the point of going to conferences, and that's what they benefit from. From mm-hmm. my own point of view, as a content creator, yeah. as the phrase is, I mean, I could talk for ages about how I see all of this playing together, and what the speeches mean to me, and so on, and what I think they should mean to other people as well, quite frankly. I think that a speech is an opportunity. It's a sort of milestone, and it should be important, and it should be taken seriously. And then it should be added to your oeuvre of work on your channel. That's the way I see it. And so I take them I probably take them far too seriously, actually. But still, I can't help myself. And so that's what it is for me. That's the sort of the primary thing for me is this is an opportunity to give a new speech about and to really tackle a topic. Right. The way it is for me is I'm stressed and really worried and worked up until I start giving the speech, and then you relax and all that. And then as soon as the speech is over, I just sort of collapse because it's like, okay, it's done now. Now I can relax. And, you know, there's a sort of rush of, I don't know, endorphins or something like that. And then I start socializing and feel extremely relaxed.
Yeah, I should probably make it a habit to write my speeches properly, because I often improvise, and I mean the speeches work often, but you also need it written down, I think, for it to have a sort of a more permanent existence, because the spoken word is effective then and there, but afterwards I think it's good to have it also posted somewhere so people can read it and digest it in another way.
It's
a good way to convey ideas, but it also needs a more sort of permanent state.
I think that you're a good improviser. I think that you're good at just talking off the cuff. But I completely agree about the permanent state. I totally agree with that. And really, this year I had a sort of, I don't want to say triumph, but I was...
Triumph of the will.
I'm certainly not going to say that. It was the Tallinn speech at Estonia, the Blue Awakening Conference, about Jordan Peterson. Now, there were 50... First of all, I was very proud of that speech. It turned out a lot better than I thought it was going to. But second, there were 50 people at that conference, but 50,000 people have watched the video of it. Mm-hmm. Now, that is absolutely remarkable. Now, imagine if I decided, I can't really be bothered filming this one. There'd be no... This wouldn't have happened. Mm-hmm. And so it's just crazy not to record them. And I mean, even if it's just audio, that's better than nothing. That means that, you know, people can still hear the speech.
Yeah. So I did at a recent event. That was 2 weeks ago in Stockholm. The camera didn't work, so we just had to record it audio. But now I have the speech and I can post it.
I remember saying to you, just get somebody to take a photo of you during the speech with their mobile phone, and then you can make a video out of the photo and the audio. That's it. I think it's essential to record these things for posterity, and so that a much, much bigger audience can see them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, without a doubt.
Yeah, it's something I really try to push people to do, because if you're going to put the effort in to go to a country and, you know, put together a speech, then you want as much... to come out of that as possible. That's my personal obsession, though.
I agree completely. Yeah, we need them recorded. I mean, not all speeches have been published yet, because it always takes a bit of effort to you know, edit and so on, and we have different people involved and so on. But we have recorded most of the speeches, and that's definitely important.
Yeah, but I agree completely. But of course, for most people, still, that as you say, the main thing is the social event, and it is great because, as you say, people are. There's no doubt whatsoever that people are alienated because just now our ideas are quite fringe. But even though most people take to them quite naturally, I mean, there's a huge amount of propaganda to prevent people from feeling nationalist feelings, for example, and so on. But still it works. The propaganda does work. And so if you break free from that propaganda, you are going to be isolated because most people around you will still be in, I'm sorry to say this, but in the matrix, as it were. So yeah, you're going to be isolated.
For most people. I mean, some of us, I mean, I've been in this thing so long, for so long that most of the people around me are just supporting me in this. And that's, I guess I'm very fortunate about that. And another sign that these things are really much needed is that when we started up in both in Norway and in Denmark, which both of those countries have basically no similar kind of events, when we had a show of hands, there were about, you know, 60-70% who were at their first event ever.
I remember that at Stockholm.
Yeah, Stockholm as well. So I mean, people need these things, and they really they benefit from the networking. And just at another event that I spoke at that I didn't organize myself, that was organized by the Nordic Alt-Right by Chris Dolny. A guy came up to me and he was sort of helping out there with organizing the event, and he came and told me that my event was the first thing he ever went to, and that was a game changer for him, and now he's involved with organizing other things. And that's really a thing that lifts you up and cheers you up. And I mean, I'm not doing these things and you're not doing these things to get a pat on the back, but still, to know that we're not just speaking for deaf ears, that we're not just sitting in an echo chamber, that we're actually making some real world changes, that's a really good inspiration. And just 2 weeks ago, when I spoke at an event in Stockholm, a guy came up to me and said that I probably don't care because he's just, you know, another guy, but still he started going to these things because he heard my podcast and that he came to the event and got to know other people and so on. And I told him, well, of course it's not irrelevant to me. Of course it's extremely important to hear those things because that's why we do it. That's why we do these things, because we want to in some way influence people for the better.
Absolutely.
So, and, I mean, I appreciate people actually saying just that things that we do matter. Not just me, but I mean that every one of us do.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because God knows there's a lot of opposition. You know, it's not easy to do these things that we do.
Yeah, another guy at the same event, it sounds silly when I say it, but he said that, well, it's easy for me to do this because I'm sort of I'm not a star in any way, but I mean that I know people and I have a good network of people, and I'm sort of quote unquote well known, and I'll get support when I get you know, attacked in different ways from our opponents. And so I mean that it's easy for me to do it, but not for everyone else. But it's definitely not easy. It involves a highly personal cost for every single one of us who are involved in this, even people who are really sort of the leading names of this movement, people like, you know, Jared Taylor or Kevin MacDonald and Greg Johnson, who are the real superstars of this thing. Even they have real personal costs, you know, in social contexts and so on, involved in their engagement in these movements. So it definitely comes. It doesn't come free for any one of us. It's harmful for anyone to be attacked in the media and so on. So it's important for us to actually have these social networks to keep us going.
Oh, it cannot be overstated. Mm-hmm. I think that this is something that's probably going to really take off next year. I think that there are multiple people, there are many people who want it, social networks, and there are multiple people sort of working on it as a problem.
Yeah.
And I think it will really take off next year. I think we're going to start to see, for example, that there will be a safe house in every city in Britain, where mm-hmm. if somebody is being hunted down, there will be a way to keep them safe, that sort of thing. I think that will start to happen, and probably in every country. And I hope that we have things like research teams, video editors who can work, you know, get something done very quickly, short notice, event organizing, security, yeah. You know, all of this stuff, I think, will start to take to happen quite spontaneously, because multiple people want it and yeah. are starting to get involved.
And also the just plain totalitarianism will intensify. Just following the James Fields trial as an example, I think people, I mean, James Fields, he's sitting in a car, the car is attacked, and he panics and you know, hits the gas and accidentally harms several people. And he gets actually sentenced for
is it not like 420 years?
Yeah, for premeditated murder. That's like a similar situation would be if I push you off a rooftop and you fall into the head of someone and kill that person, and you get jailed for first degree murder for premeditated murder. I mean, that's the same thing. You are physically involved in the chain of events, but you are not the one who set that chain of events going. You are not the agent, the main agent who get the whole thing going. If anyone should be convicted, it's the people who attacked the car, who set the chain of event going, that ended up with that woman being dead now. So because a person who panics cannot control his actions, so he cannot be held responsible for it. So I think with the growing alternative media, more and more people, hundreds of thousands of people are made aware of this. And I think, it's totalitarianism is harmful to us, but it's also harmful to themselves, because they undermine the public confidence in the whole system and their whole power structure. So things are definitely getting worse and better at the same time, because we get more and more of the good people, and only the really insane, crazy people remain with the sort of totalitarian, politically correct system.
Well, and we're also seeing that online. I mean, whatever you think about Sargon of Akkad, the fact that Patreon have banned him for nothing. I mean, they've banned him because he's a counter-progressive voice who gets a huge audience. And that's what I think. And this thing about, you know, this recording, I think that's just where he said words that I won't repeat.
Yeah,
I think that's just nonsense. I think that's just a pretext. But anyway, the point is that this is a company deciding to take away a man's livelihood for political reasons.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this is like,
and when a system becomes unpredictable like that, people really lose loyalty to it, and it's like, you know, a Kafka trial where everything just feels weird and uncomfortable, and you don't want to be a part of it, and that's, people get more and more of that. So I think that's definitely going to harm the loyalty that people feel to these systems, and just the confidence in the rule of law and things like that.
Well, they can see that things are not fair or consistent. They can see that something unjust and vindictive, nasty is going on. Mm-hmm. They can see it in the national governments who behave in, you know, ridiculous ways, and they can see it in these websites and the payment processors and the funding platforms that censor people for political reasons. Yeah. So everyone can now see what's going on. And the Sargon thing I don't like that it happened. I don't think it was right that it happened, but it has had this effect of waking a much, much bigger audience up to the reality of what people like us have been living with for much longer.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. These kinds of persecutions go way back, but it's now they get a bit more publicity. But I also want to mention that it's not only events that I have organized, but I've also been invited to speak at other events. And actually, I've spoken at 7 events totally this year in several different countries. There are three events in Stockholm, one in Copenhagen, one in Helsinki, one in the Netherlands, and one in Kiev. So, I mean, I think this is really good and cheerful news that things are happening everywhere, and we're just, you know, people like you and me who get invited to these things to speak. We travel around all the time, and it's just wonderful to be a part of this thing that's really really alive. It's not just on the internet, or it's not just, you know, theoretical. It's not just theory, philosophy. It's a real world network of good people who keep each other going, and it's a great thing, and it'll only grow and become more influential.
Oh yeah, I mean this is something that I think is worth pointing out. The term alt-right might resurge, but for now at least it's really falling by the wayside. And so some people are saying that that's it over, but I think that is incredibly naive of them, because I don't think it can die, and I certainly don't think that it will die, because all of the concerns that brought it about are still there. They're much worse now. There's, you know, society's in a much worse condition now than it was in 5 years ago. So it's not I think it's just going to transform. The movement is transforming just now.
Yeah, I mean, the alt-right has only existed for the last few percent of my involvement in this thing. So, I mean, I've been at this since the late 90s, and others have been involved even much longer than that. Jared Taylor has been going since the early 90s, and so on and so forth. So, I mean, it's the alt-right thing was just a small part of that, and that's not essential to what we're doing. The nationalist movement will definitely keep going despite the alt-right term and label not being very sort of popular anymore. So that's definitely, yeah, that's not a problem.
Some people in the live chat are saying that I shouldn't say this because it's not true. Whatever. I mean, I know that the term isn't dead, and you know, there's a program I think that's going right now actually called This Week on the Alt-Right. I know that. I'm not saying that it's over and that we shouldn't use the term. I'm just saying there seems to be a desire to escape the confines of that term has begun to impose upon everyone. And you know, I very much feel that myself, quite honestly. It doesn't mean that I disagree with anything that I've said in the past. It just means that I you know, people grow. So anyway, but I'm not disavowing or whatever. I'm just saying that
I've never identified with that term, but I have many friends who do, and I think that's fine. I don't depend on that being successful or not successful. I mean, it's just another label, but our problems have existed for a long time, for many decades before the alt-right came into existence, and we're still going to keep going after that. So we don't depend on a specific term. That's not really what this is about.
Somebody in the live chat has just said that whatever you think about the term alt-right, and some people are saying it's a bad label and all this, and someone's saying whatever you think about it, it's not as bad as intellectual dark web.
Yeah, I mean,
that is just a terrible name. Terrible.
This is probably the first time I hear that. So.
Oh, do you not know that term? You can look into that later. It's a it's Jordan Peterson and his crowd.
I'm not very impressed by Jordan Peterson. I mean, a funny thing, I just read this, I don't know if it's a new article, but a thing he wrote that he got a really bad treatment from the Forward, the Jewish journal. He got really badly treated by a journalist there, and I mean that because he tried to. This is what Jim Goad calls the Passover syndrome, that you try to paint someone else as the bad guy so you get a pass, basically like the Passover in the Old Testament and so on, you know, painting the blood on the door so the angel of death could find the others to kill, not me. This just shows that kind of mentality doesn't work. You'll get attacked anyways. That doesn't work, and it serves him well because he shouldn't be throwing people under the bus. So he deserves that kind of treatment.
I agree. There's a lot that could be said about Jordan Peterson, and indeed at the Erkenbrand conference where we both spoke, I did a mini speech about him. Mm-hmm. So it's people who are watching this will probably be aware of that speech. It's only like 10 minutes long, largely improvised. Anyway, let's move on from all of that to the other thing that we wanted to talk about, which is your new project, The Guide to Culture.
Yes, Guide to Culture. It's a new thing. It's a new podcast. It's available both on YouTube and on Spreaker for those who prefer audio only. And I think you have links in the YouTube description.
So I do indeed.
Yeah, so it's Guide to Culture, and culture is spelled KULCHUR, which is a tribute to Ezra Pound. I know it's a source of a bit of confusion for people that I spell it that way, but it's Guide to Culture is a book by Ezra Pound that's really great. And what we do is I have different guests on. We talk about so far we've only dealt with films, but we're gonna deal with books as well. We've dealt with Starship Troopers was the latest when I had Guillaume de Rocher on. If I may say so myself, that was a good conversation. He's a really great writer and a good speaker, Guillaume. I've had John Morgan and I've had James O'Meara, who talked about They Live and a couple of Swedish films, The Square and so on. And we're going to get to books and the more philosophical, ideological things. But, you know, we talk about philosophy and ideology when we talk about these films as well. So you should definitely follow that. That's it's also posted on Countercurrents. And we have a few surprises. There's going to be two shows in the days between Christmas and New Year's, and that's going to be two very special episodes, which you don't want to miss. So you should go in to subscribe to the channel on YouTube or on Spreaker, so you don't miss them. That's going to be good fun, and I think it's going to be quite popular because it's going to deal with controversial topics in the whole world of the alternative right or the new right or white nationalism or whatever you want to call it. So it's going to deal with quite controversial things that have topics that have divided people. And we're going to talk a bit about that. And I think it's going to be very interesting. So you don't want to miss that.
So it's not just culture as in art and film and so on. It's also about the culture within our community.
Well, yeah, it's about history, philosophy, everything that's involved in culture. I mean, it's what I meant by calling it Guide to Culture is not just, you know, art and it's a way to indicate that we're not talking about current events and the latest news and, you know, news commentary. There are plenty of shows about those things, like I don't know, you know, TDS and so on. They have pods on where they comment latest news and so on, and they are great shows that I admire. But I had the intention to do other types of things, talk more about philosophical things and so on. So that's why I called it Guide to Culture.
Right. Okay. And do you envisage that having a long term future?
Yeah, that's the plan, definitely. So far, we've done 5 episodes, including the pilot. But yeah, the plan is definitely to keep going and probably like once a week. Now I've been traveling a lot. I've, like I said, two weekends in a row, I've been traveling, speaking at conferences. So I haven't been able able to produce them now. But like I said, in the days between Christmas and New Year's, there's going to be two episodes that are going to get quite some attention, I think. And that's going to be good fun. And I'm looking forward to that.
Excellent. Well, is there anything else you'd like to say before we wrap up?
Yeah, I could tell you a little bit about Kiev. I went to Ukraine this weekend, and I was invited to speak at a... It's actually quite an impressive thing they have going. I mean, it's Ukraine is involved in a well, it's sort of a war, but a revolution. It's still a bit chaotic after that, I get the impression, but still there are groups doing really good things. There's especially a metapolitical group, a sort of a project. They have their own house, basically, the Plumbing Club, and they produce graphics. I can show you some of the graphics. I've got some posters from them, and they're really good. They have these. This is one, an Ingmar Bergman movie poster. They have movie nights and discuss philosophy. They discuss Nietzsche and so on, and they publish books and design things and so on. And it's and the people I talked to were really intelligent, really good people, and it was quite impressive. I gave a speech there Friday evening about some of metaphysical themes based on Martin Heidegger's philosophy and Nietzsche and so on, and that's going to be published in a couple of days, I expect, that speech.
Excellent. Yeah. Well, I'll add that the URL for that to the description here if you tell me it. So
yeah,
you know,
I'll send it to you. Yeah.
When people re-listen to this, that it will be linked there.
Mm-hmm.
So, excellent. Well, let's leave it at that. So, this is Frode Midyard of Skanza Forum and Guide to Culture. And
yes,
Thank you for taking part in Millennial.
I want to thank you, and I want to wish you and all the listeners a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year and God Jul to the the Swedish and Scandinavian people. So keep the good thing going, and take care.
Okay. All right. And I'll be back in about 10 minutes with the Boer Republic. So I'll see you then.